something went on here, something went on there. And
there he is.
Hey, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Hanging in there, you know.
Kind of day to day?
Still, yeah. Yeah. Today's good. It was nice that yesterday was sunny. That was nice. Today's not, but it was sunny in the morning. It's stuff like that that helps. Talking to friends, you know. I probably need to continue, you know, finding ways. So that might mean I might need to talk to somebody professionally, too, you know, just to kind of make sure I'm doing the right things and trying I think the most important thing I've learned is to kind of just surrender all thoughts at this point, just because there's no point in kind of harboring or conjuring up reasons for or against why, all those things. It really kind of, it's not about that, it's just kind of more about trying to find, I guess, love in everything around you, you know, and just trying to kind of stay with what's happening around you at the given moment, as opposed to, you know, thinking about the past or future, you know.
What do you mean surrender to the thoughts?
Well, like I said, don't try to make opinions for or against what happened, or things that can't be connected in a way, you know what I mean? Just you don't, there's no point in that. There's no point in being upset or being it's about just trying to find you know, be like, it's nice to be with my mom and just hang out with her and talk to her, and instead of questioning things, you know.
Right.
I think when you start trying to find reasons why, or it doesn't really get anywhere, you know, and it makes more sense to just kind of, because everybody's, you know, feeling shitty, you know, like the concept of when you hear a guy said, I was all over the ice, like this is the all over the ice styles, like it's just kind of, some days you feel like you got it together, and then all of a sudden something will kind of trigger a really, you know, set some sadness and some tears, and so that to me it's like those things kind of always come in waves of conjured thought, and I just at this time I'm kind of tired of trying to let my thoughts, you know, control what I do or think. You know, it's really gotten to me too much, where it's like questioning or doing things that you can't solve in your head. It really takes away from your life, and you really stop thinking about the bigger picture, which is your life, like your own personal journey that we're all going through. These things are awful that are happening, but you have to kind of still think about your kind of the love that's there and that you feel sometimes, and when you're out with your family, and if you're just outside and just kind of breathing, it's a never bad. It's never a bad thing. So you just try and fill your life with more of that, and I think not trying to think of reasons why, for, or against, not doing that definitely makes things better, you know. Yeah.
Shook was reading a book last night before bed, and one of the sentences was, this kid is kind of writing in their diary. One of the sentences was, is it possible to be happy and sad at the same time? And we actually stopped the book there for a second and talked about whether it's possible to be both. And Indy's example was, for example, if someone's dad died and then they were adopted by a really nice family, they'd probably be happy to be with that nice family, but they'd probably still be sad that their dad died. And I never thought about it quite that way before, but I guess in the macro sense, you can be sad because, especially in hearing you talk about it just now, it had never occurred to me quite like this before, but you have to find a way to be okay with never knowing the answers to some of those big questions, especially around James. You'll never know. Yeah. And how do you become okay with that? But finding moments of pure joy with your kids and your wife and, you know, when the sun is shining, like taking those little victories for what they are in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, and I think that these are the silver linings of bad situations, because it takes stuff like this to really have you question other things, you know, or even, you know, life itself. When you kind of get twisted and turned, you really kind of separate yourself for the first time more than before, because I mean, without loss, you haven't. So, you know, until you get it, it's just, you have to kind of evaluate it from that perspective that's brand new. And I think the easiest way for me, honestly, is just to kind of feel my feet on the ground and just kind of feel my breath and my body and try and you know, create great conversation with the great people surrounding me. That's the easiest way to kind of guarantee that you're not gonna fall into a pit of darkness mentally, you know.
I should know the answer to this. Have you lost someone before?
Well,
like,
I mean,
I guess
yeah, my grandparents, which is, it's something, and because they were really close, but you know, when you're young, I can see it with my kids, like with both funerals. It's like it's not the same. The connection isn't there. It's impossible. Even if they were there every weekend together. I actually take that back, because I know that Lisa's mom, who's been living with us a lot, there's a connection with her and our kids that would probably be similar to a parent, you know. So I think it's a situation where if with the connection and how close they are, but when it's when it's your parents, it hits harder. When it's your siblings, it hits really hard. But when it's your kids, that's when it probably hits the hardest, or your significant other. I mean, that's kind of the chart, I think, that in terms of closest to the bone, the kid being the number one. But when it's just... you know, when it piles up like it does, and it just does, and I don't know why, but it's like you hear one story about something happening and another one, and like it's just been a really rough spring, man. Like, a lot of people have reached out to me and told me stuff that they've been dealing with, and it's hard, man. It's hard for a lot of people, and like I said, you have to just kind of relinquish the best things, which is your relationships and your inner peace.
You know? Those little hugs.
Yeah, exactly. walks, taking walks, man, like just stuff that you think is simple and isn't gonna do anything really does. You know, there's a lot of nice places around your neighborhoods that you probably don't get to see. That's even starting there, you know.
I love me a walk. I would never underestimate the benefits of a walk. And the days that I go to bed happiest are when Carol and I have gone for a walk, because it took me a while to figure out, but if we're going for a walk together, one of us is not doing something else at the same time. It's not like, yeah, let's chat while we do the dishes or putter around or whatever. We're just hanging. Yeah. And even if it's just a brain dump where you just kind of purge what's on your mind on your walk, you always come back feeling better.
Well, people don't have conversations that last that much longer than, you know, when you're interrupted with comings and goings of work, or you're on your phone, or you're not listening, or it's just there's always interruptions. But when you're walking and talking, that's, yeah,
it's your only, like, job.
Well, I mean, I think the conversation is as important as the walking, to be honest, because you're growing your relationship with someone that you love, and it's those are the kind of things that probably when we're all on our deathbeds, we're gonna, you know, miss the most, but be happy that happened, are those moments, not, you know, sitting by yourself. So that's good stuff.
It is the simple moments that tend to stand out the most.
Yeah, it's cheap and easy.
Yeah.
Walking still free.
Yeah, exactly.
For now.
As you know, my dad died when I was 7, and out of a self-preservation instinct, I didn't even allow myself the half a second of, man, that kind of sucks. I just went immediately to, which is good, because if he hadn't died, I wouldn't be as independent as I am, and I wouldn't be as strong as I am, and I wouldn't be able to accomplish the things that I want to do. It took me a long time, like probably till I was in my 30s, to allow for even that moment of, man, that is kind of a drag. I wonder how my life would have turned out differently had he not died. But it'll be 40 years or something next year. And even still, like I'm optimistic almost to a fault. Even still, when my mom died, which, as you know, is just in the last couple of years, my first thought was, well, this is great, because she's not going to suffer anymore, and, you know, it's not going to be this long, terrible road downhill. What a weird thing to think when your parent passes away. Well, this is great. But I genuinely felt those things. Like, it happened mercifully fast, and she would have wanted it that way, and she did get lucky. But that's a crazy level of optimism.
Well, because you knew there was going to be horrible suffering only in her future.
Yeah, it wasn't going to get better, that's for sure.
I mean, cancer is terrible, and like, just to see somebody go through that is awful. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. It wasn't a situation where she just kind of was not sick and passed away. I mean, it's a similar thing with my dad going first, as opposed to my mom, because, you know, her dementia is just kind of, again, still, I was just with her a couple days ago, no crying yet, you know.
Really?
So
does it come up? Does she want to talk about it?
She'll say it's sad, you know, oh, it's sad, you know, it makes me sad, but I think she's more lonely than anything.
Because they were homies.
Well, yeah, but if I'm leaving, she's like, damn, you know. But I'm like, I gotta go home. Right? I can't spend the week up here. So I've had caregivers are coming to check up on her, and I got her a GPS device so I can look on my phone and see where she's at all times.
Oh, that's smart.
And listen in on her. So
what is the GPS? Like a watch kind of thing?
Yeah, it's Angel Sense, it's called. It was developed by a woman who had an autistic son, and he couldn't be left alone, and he's an adult now, where, so she, you use it, there's a boundary, whenever they go somewhere, it tells you where exactly where they are, but where they're going, so my mom usually goes across the street for darts to the metro, like that's her move. Okay, so I look on the GPS, yeah, went over to the metro. Oh, like went to the wrong street, but then came back and figured out the
wow.
Yeah.
So if she
did... one time she was walking down like Cundles, and I'm like, oh, fuck, mom, where are you going? What's going on? And I, when you listen in, you can actually, they can hear you, but it was in her pocket. And I'm like, all I hear is her walking, and I'm like, I see her going down Cundles, but then she went into the Max there to get darts there, because I guess
it so was she was okay. Yeah, so she back, can though. Hear you. You can say, "Mom, where are you going?"
She doesn't know. She her pockets are big, so she can't. But I mean, I.
But in theory, that is an aspect of this technology.
Well, because Jet's
that's huge.
Jet's in Barrie close by, so I was like, "Hey, Jet, Mom's going to Cundles." So then he was alerted, but as soon as I realized she was coming back, because he has it on his phone too. It's a great thing, because if it goes out of a boundary, you get an email on your phone.
It's so amazing.
Yeah, it's like a couple $100 for the unit, and it's like $30 a month, because you have to, it's like data.
What peace of mind, that's incredible.
Yeah, for sure.
So can she be alone if she has that?
Yeah. So, like I said, the caregiver will come twice a day for an hour each. And, you know, I'll go up there 3 days of the week to kind of split it up. So, you know, the caregiver's just there for 2 hours in the daytime, but they just kind of hang out, or they'll, you know, help her do laundry or just talk about stuff.
That's great.
Yeah, it is.
That's a real good peace of mind. So can she stay put where she is for the time being?
No, she's still on the wait list. So, I mean, obviously this is handy and stuff, but it's not cheap. So, I mean, it can't go on forever with her rent and all the other stuff. So, it's, you know, to be in a permanent place, it'll be similar to exactly where she is now, a little bit smaller, but she'll be able to have TV and furniture and stuff in there. And
right.
She won't have the dog. She'll have to get we'll have to get the dog another place to go in the family. So she can't have a dog, but she can socialize more. Where she is now, she's sitting in the house with the dog only. But if she was at a care facility,
she'd be able to play some crib or something.
Yeah, and she loves talking, you know, so she'd be so happy, like way happier. Just chilling with people her age and stuff that they have in common, and she loves that. She loves talking to people. And my dad was very recluse, like sit in the house, never wanted to talk to anybody. So, I mean, for her to get to this next step is huge for her, because she's still healthy, still physically good, just has this mental issue that's...
It'd be great for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
When my mom went to Northwood in Halifax, she had a roommate named Dorothy, and they grew very close very quickly. And Dorothy would put the boots to dudes that kind of wandered around poking their head in the door, like to see if there was any action going on in there. Like, I don't mean full-on action, but like some dudes would kind of poke their heads in the door, like, what are you ladies up to this afternoon? Dorothy's like, nope. Barking up the wrong tree. Off you go. But it was sweet. Their friendship was beautiful.
Yeah,
it was really nice for them to both have company. My mom was cremated, and we debated what to do, whether we would bury her in a cemetery close to our house or what the long-term plan was. She didn't have any preference or wishes in that way beyond being cremated. So she's in the mudroom in our house in a box, and she's been there ever since. And we keep kind of debating what the long-term plan should be. And I was thinking, like, I don't know, is it weird for the girls to know that their grandmother's sort of in the mudroom? It's kind of Susan's room. She collected all kinds of costume jewelry And when she passed away, the girls got it all. And so Indy came down a couple of months ago with two necklaces and said, can you get Susan down? I said, what do you mean? She was like, can you get her down? So I got the box down, and she wanted to ask her which of the necklaces she thought she should wear to school, which was just beautiful, right?
Wow.
You think, oh, man, is this weird for the kids? Or, you know, we don't want to make it weird. They process it so much cleaner and easier than we do in so many ways. It was sweet.
Yeah, my like, between me and Jet and cousin Elliot, my grandparents, like, and my dad, my uncle John, they're, like, they're all, we still have everybody, remains, James, it's like, the whole family.
Where is everybody?
Well, like, three of them are at Elliot's, two are at Jet's, I got a couple.
Really?
It's like you said, like, I don't know, I mean, we scatter them among Scotland, or...
Right.
To take Ronnie home.
I know.
You know?
I know, in a way, I like the idea...
Do the big Lebowski coffee can, and then everyone in the face.
Yeah, the Maxwell House coffee can.
Oh, shit, dude, I'm sorry. Goddamn wind.
God damn it, Walter.
In a way, I kind of like the idea of a tactile place to go and visit, but I also kind of like the idea that she lives in the mudroom. Like,
yeah, hey, man. Yeah.
What's cooler than that?
Well, exactly. And she's not going to stay in the mudroom. Like, eventually you'll,
I don't know,
move on, maybe, and she'll come with you. Maybe she'll stay there.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll have to build on an addition or take her when we go on the bus. Like, there's something kind of kooky, but it's kind of sweet too.
Yeah,
there you go.
Stuff going on in there.
Stuff going on in there, bud. Take a break.
DNA. All right.
Bam, bam, bam. That orange
one. Breaking news.
TNT Investment Corp.
I know. It's exciting. I have never invested in something like untraditional or a little high risk or a piece of technology, and we both have.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell the people?
Well, it's fantastic. It's Side Door Concerts. It's Side Door. I guess, is it Side Door Access?
Yep.
Is the actual, on Twitter, is that the best way to find it?
SideDoorAccess.com, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like the coolest thing ever to happen to live music since, you know, what they considered a happening in the 60s, which was something cool happening in a small amount of people. You know, seeing somebody that's very... talented at their instrument kind of fill a small place with greatness, and that's what this is. It's basically an app where people can host events in their private house or in church basements or in just like interesting places other than typical venues, and it's grown exponentially in the last, 3 years the company's been going now. And I just think it's an incredible model, and it's a valid thing for the future. I remember the most interesting story that would kind of tie this together was when I met Jeff Buckley and talked to him. Yeah, for like, he was opening for Juliana Hatfield.
Have we ever talked about this before?
I think so. Anyway, I was a huge fan because he was on Columbia Records and Our Lady Peace was on Columbia, so we knew about his music. Like, we got the pre-release of Grace, the first record, and we were huge, huge fans already. So he was opening for Juliana Hatfield, and anyway, he was talking about how he hated playing venues, like typical venues. He wanted to play in basements or people's houses and just different places. People that like play in a venue that's not just been, I guess what he felt was just like musically taken, just the walls are wallpapered with energy over and over the same thing. And just to go into a place that hasn't been performed in is cool. There's something there in terms of the energy of that, the difference. So to see, you know, Tim Baker playing in somebody's house or Dan Mangan playing in an intimate place, and it just it's beautiful, man. It's great. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Me too. Was founded by a woman named Laura Simpson and Dan Mangan. Laura, I've known for years. She's been an artist manager. She's worked in radio. She really has a lot of cred in the music business. She's very smart and has a great work ethic. And she and Dan have done so many things that were really smart. The first is, you know, like with a restaurant, if you have the grand opening, the first day your doors are open and people go and they get bad service and they tell everyone they had an awful meal and you're kind of sunk before it even gets going. They mm-hmm. have deliberately rolled this thing out in very small bites so that they could address any issues as they came up. The yeah. first really smart thing they did is the technology. The whole transaction happens in the app. So if you're buying a ticket to something, you don't get punted out to PayPal or have to pay a service charge to someone else. There are no unhidden or hidden costs. So you can see if you pay $15 for a ticket to a show, $10.99 goes to the artist, $1 something goes to royalties, $1.73 goes to the host, then there's some tax. Like the math is transparent. Mm-hmm. The second thing they figured out that no one else has is there has to be a match between the host and the performer. So Cannibal Corpse couldn't just book into your cottage without you being like, oh, wait a second, what is happening? So you have to actually just be into the idea of the act, which is yeah. really smart. The third thing is, in app, if you're a host, you can buy PA, like rent PAs and the sound gear you need. You can arrange to have your space cleaned afterwards. You can get insurance in the app. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, because it's happening in people's homes, say it's BYOB, so you don't need liquor licenses. Mm-hmm. And finally, I think one of the great things that they did is some performers have a bit of a stigma about performing in someone's actual home. Some hosts would love to host concerts, but maybe not in their place. So once they broadened it to include community centers and church basements and places like this, if you're Tim Baker, for example, and you're in mm-hmm. Calgary Wednesday and Vancouver Saturday, you can add a couple of side door dates in smaller communities between those two cities. Yeah. So not only do people that wouldn't otherwise get a chance to see you get to see you and have a unique, intimate experience, but you can also help offset the cost of being on the road. I asked her when we spoke about it the first time, are people using this for kind of in between nights, or are they using it as the model? And she said, well, what we've seen a few times is people will book a few shows on in between nights, realize how great the model is, and then just decide to book their whole tour that way the next time. You and I know from experience, if we're going to play to 16 people at Crocodile Rock, we might as well do a Bud House, which has kind of a spirit and swagger about it. Yeah. Not to mention the economic side of it all, which is the artist gets to actually keep more of the money, mm-hmm. which is kind of the point of the whole thing. So a lot yeah. of hosts actually give the money back to the artist. Oh, one last thing I'd like to say. The money is all held in the app or in cyberland. So there's nobody chasing anybody afterwards to settle the shows. Just when the show is over at midnight, all parties get an e-transfer with the money that is owed to them. So it's so great. Simple and clean and honest and transparent mm-hmm. in ways that sometimes live shows aren't. And I think for you and I, we haven't talked about Taggart and Torrens using Side Door, but it sure seems like the right move for us.
Absolutely. I'm all about it. I think it's fantastic for not just podcasts, but comedians. You know, how many times does a comic play to 30 people in a place, and as opposed to where they can have 30 people in a small place where it's just right in front of you and there's just way more vibe?
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
So especially they've been rolling it out.
A venue, like, and all of these, the host places are just, they're all cool. They have a vibe, you know. It's a great layout.
Could be a brewery or a castle or a church or any of those things. Yeah. And the other thing is, maybe if you live in, I don't know, 407 and Steeles, and to go, I don't even think they intersect. That's just my intersection for somewhere far from downtown.
Yeah.
And to take an Uber down and back and go out for a couple of drinks beforehand and maybe have a bite to eat and see a show, that's a lot of dough. Whereas to buy a six pack and go to Thomas's house two streets over, that's probably more manageable for a lot of people. So it just feels Canadianity.
It is. It's total bodism, and that's why we're all about it. It's
yeah. Great. So they have rolled it out in a really small way. The plan is to roll it out in a bigger way. In Canada first, then North America, then the world, because they're already hosts signed up. They call it the Dan effect. When Dan plays somewhere and talks about it, new hosts sign up all the time.
Yeah.
So if you have the space or the inclination, sign up to be a host at SideDoorAccess.com, because it's actually free.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Love it.
I couldn't invest in something I didn't actually believe in. I'm sure people can hear in our tones that we actually believe in it and think it's a cool idea. So we don't want it to feel like an infomercial, but just sharing something that we're both pretty fired up about, because it's so DIY. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the best part. And this is something that we think could kind of change the culture of live shows.
Yeah.
Which is the best. Because the best thing about it is it actually helps artists that generally aren't getting enough get way more. So it's something special, definitely.
Well, not to keep harping on Crocodile Rock, but if Crunch Crunch Guy is there with three of his cronies after playing 18 and they're not really there to see your band or your podcast, man. And they're just having jalapeno poppers and trying to wheel a waitress, it's not the best environment to play a show in. But you can assume if someone bought a ticket to see you in Toby's living room, it must be because they really want to see you. So that's already a good head start.
I mean, if you're sick and tired of having greasy Sid, you know, hanker up to you with his stinky breath at the Cave in Barrie.
Is that a real place?
No, but there's a cave.
I want it to be more than anything.
There was a cave in Alliston back in the day, so it should be.
There was La Cave in Halifax, too.
Oh, and gross. The Cave in Alliston was known for, like, the grossest entrance in all history of bars in that area.
Was it actually a cave?
It was just this big kind of roundish door, and it was, like, in a little bit, so it, like, just looked, like, kind of
greasy,
but there was piss stains all over the wall and
just
puke all over the, because it was the Cave.
La Cave in Halifax was actually kind of an underground basement restaurant where they had little, like, rooms for two and you could go have dessert, but there were no windows and no evacuation plan if stuff went sideways. If anything shimmied, you might be trapped in there forever.
Like, we've done the Greasies, but, like, what's, like, the most greasy front bar? Like, the Liquor Dome's pretty greasy, like, that front door, that area. Well, because of that picture, right, of the guy out front, remember?
Yeah. What was he doing? Was he getting his bird washed?
Something like that.
Yeah. Outside the Liquor Dome.
But, like, if there's, you know, the ones that are... They're, that's kind of a thing of the past, where it's just you have the encrusted doors at the front.
I kind of like the old school...
like where you grab the door like this with your arms, you don't have to touch it.
Yeah, with your hand, like tucked into your sweatshirt. There's a place in Dartmouth called the Ship Victory Lounge, and it's in the shape of a ship, and the windows are portholes. and everything inside is kind of nautical themed. Like, I kind of miss that stuff.
Yeah, there's not enough of that.
I like myself where everything is like
so dusty.
Well, I like right? People used to put more thought into things. Remember, we met a kid when we were on tour somewhere, and his job was to like buy a bunch of vintage wheelbarrows and go around and dress Montana's restaurants, right?
Oh, that's right.
Remember, that's his job.
That's right.
He got some barn board and a couple of old hose, and I hang them strategically on the walls and stuff.
Picking, just going from place to place.
Country them up.
I'll buy those license plates.
Yeah.
I'll buy those license plates there. And that old Castrol sign.
Yeah, this old right? This tiny sled will look great at the Montanas in Vaughn.
Yeah. And I end up that huge, that little, that power, like the little car with the wheels on it.
Yeah.
Those tin cars.
Or how about, like yeah, and a vintage umbrella stand.
And that gas pump.
But some stuff has to be, like, up on high shelves that no one could ever reach, like the old two-man saw.
Yeah, but then they'll be like
staple that up on the second floor,
like a Cessna. They'll have a plane upside down on the roof.
Hanging with monofilament.
The old car hood.
Who decides what's in at Montana's restaurant?
There's always old skis. Like that's
old
always
skis, old fighter pilot helmets, the leather ones with the goggles built in. I mean, of the jobs you could have though, is that such a bad one?
No, it's pretty good.
Just go around to Montana's and put some old stuff on.
Okay, so like what? There's like the long fishing boots, like the one that you wear on your shoulders,
hip waders.
Like what would be offside? Like that's. What's that doing up there?
A skull? you should just put one little Easter egg in every restaurant that you do.
Yeah, like, what the hell's that doing
there? That's a rat in a trap. Why is that part of the decor?
An Alice Cooper jacket? Why is that there?
Oh, man.
Right?
I was shooting a thing for Sportsnet yesterday with Tara Sloan, giving her a tour of Dartmouth. And talking about how when we grew up here, the joke always was the nicest thing about Dartmouth was the view of Halifax. But now Dartmouth is awesome. There's a lot to do and see in Dartmouth. And one of the places that we went was Joel Plaskett's studio, New Scotland Yard, and he, on his studio door, when the door shuts, there's a velvet jacket that says Anne Murray Show on the back. And it's that old school, like, the jacket itself is velvet, but the cuffs and the collar have three contrast stripes.
Yeah.
Like, so specific to a time. 1970 something for sure.
Like the kind that, like, is it a tour jacket?
I think whoever worked on the Anne, I didn't even know there was an Anne Murray Show.
A production
show.
Jacket?
Yeah, like a production
for
jacket.
CBC or something?
Yeah. There always used to be guys at the shoe shop in Halifax with like black satin Road to Avonlea jackets and stuff because they wanted people to know they worked in the business. Where did you get that ENG season 2 mock turtleneck?
No way. Yeah, what, so you can. What's the
what would be a Canadianity crew item that you would like to have?
Oh, I'd love a Beachcombers crew jacket or a hat or something.
There must be one on eBay.
Yeah, I don't know.
A Danger Bay hoodie. Well, did you see Drake, by the way, the other night to the Raptors game, wore a Breaker High hoodie?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess he had it made.
Yeah, right?
That like, doesn't no exist, way. Does it?
Of course, no. He had that made, for sure.
Would you wear, let's play would you wear. Would you wear a black satin jacket that said Edison Twins on the back?
Sure.
Would you wear
a
felt roots jacket with leather sleeves that said Under the Umbrella Tree on the back? Like Kids Puppet Show.
No, I know. I didn't. Probably not.
Would you wear a black leather jacket that said Fraggle Rock.
Sure.
Would you?
Jim Henson. All day with Jim Henson. Yeah.
Even if the cut of the jacket and the color was kind of dated, but it said something cool and retro on the back, does that trump it?
Even if, like, the shoulder pads were, like, the hair on one of the characters?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd wear that, sure.
Yeah, so it's a leather jacket with, like, Danier leather shoulder pads, 80s special, but it says Fraggle Rock. Would you rock it?
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Well, I mean, not every day, but yeah, for Jim Henson Day. I mean, I'm with a Muppets one would be a lot cooler.
Would be amazing.
Yeah.
Would you wear a street legal jacket?
No. Remember that show got the reboot got canceled.
I know.
Told you.
There's so many stories left to tell.
Law.
Would you wear The Associates?
I don't even know what that is. Is that a show?
Traitors?
I would wear a Bumper Stumpers jacket. Would you?
I would too. Yeah, for sure. But only if it said BMPR STMPRS. Oh,
yeah. Yes.
So it in and of itself was a mystery to solve.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff.
Take a break, bud.
Yeah.
Guess what, Tags?
What?
The pool is open.
The pool's open?
The pool guys were here already, and they opened the pool.
The pool guys opened the pool. Obviously, you're not getting in there anytime soon.
Well, it doesn't sound crazy when you think that it's kind of the 10th of May or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it does sound crazy considering there have been flurries in the past week. Like, this is the craziest, fluctuatiest spring ever. But one of the reasons that I'm excited the pool's open, Toolsy's coming to visit this summer.
Oh, yeah.
Toolsy's coming out east and he's bringing his girls.
That's awesome.
There's going to be a pack of wild girls running around swimming, partying.
That'll be the best.
I know.
Is he going to roll in with his, like, an RV? Or is he, like, how's he coming out there?
Just I don't know. I know
place to place?
Last year, he went to PEI, as you know, and I think really loved it. So it sounds like this year he's doing a Nova Scotia PEI combo. They'll probably fly to Halifax and then hang out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We'll have to get full updates.
All the things of spring, like I got the bus out of storage the other day. I was like, this will be great for when Toolsy comes. He can stay in the bus.
Yeah.
I'm measuring everything about spring to do with. He's probably coming for one night in like late July.
It's exciting. Oh, he's going to have a blast. Yeah. It'll be a long, great night. That's the best thing.
Yep. He's a good Toolsy. Hang.
Yeah.
He's a good hang with Toolsy.
I always try and have a couple nights in the summer with him for at least, because he's just such a good time.
Good stuff for the heart. Best.
Yeah.
Hey, so sure. I did the East Coast Music Awards again last weekend. It was in Charlottetown.
Nice. Yes.
I like the organizer of the East Coast Music Awards. His name is Andy. I guess he's the director of it. And he has worked at festivals in Ontario and created some festivals in Ontario. He has a very open mind as an approach to something like an award show. And it's so freeing after working on award shows that are more rigid and structured to kind of be able to do whatever you want. So I got to do an opening musical number with Rose Cousins and The Wants from Newfoundland.
Nice.
And it was so fun. It was like not a traditional monologue or anything, but kind of a fun time. Saw our buds Fortunate Ones there.
Nice.
Andrew and Kat. Andrew looks great. Wow. He's been doing two-a-days at the gym.
Oh, really? He's getting, like, getting all buffed?
Jacked and buff. And
what's the line you say shape? That? It's like anybody that loses weight. It's like, hey, last time I saw you, you were all buffet. Now you're all buff.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that line. But he looks great. And they're such good people and so much fun to hang out with.
I love them. Yes.
But there were like your Jimmy Rankins and your Lenny Gallants and Catherine McClellan, all the people that you would assume might be on a show, the East Coast Music Awards. But there's a gal named Renee Smith from North Preston, Nova Scotia. And I think, if I have it right, she's been writing with Mary J. She's the real thing, man. She burnt that place to the ground. So if you like the pop music and the R&B, Reeny, R-E-E-N-Y, Smith. She has a new track with David Miles, too, produced by Classified. That's worth checking out. I know I say this all the time. Every time I see live music, I think, why don't I do this more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Why no Alan Doyle sightings?
Alan Doyle wasn't there. It was a big year for Alan Doyle last year.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know if he didn't have a record that was eligible.
He's in between, but it's just always good to hear a story. Next year will be...
Who was it? Was it Raina who tweeted after the Junos that she talked to Alan Doyle? It wasn't even to us. She just tweeted, "Hey, I talked to Alan Doyle on the red carpet about the new record and Gan Gogues and just how things are going." And I was like, wait a second. You can't just... toss that off. What do you mean? You talked to him about Gan Gogues. Like, he knows about it? She's like, oh, yeah, he loves it. It's funny to imagine how this stuff would get back to people. Like, imagine trying to explain Gan Gogues to someone who didn't even know.
Well, it doesn't take long. It's a pretty good joke. It, like, feels like a joke to me. But
it does feel like a joke.
With a great punchline.
Yeah. Just one thing I hate, it's Gan Gogues. And we know from doing our live shows that Gan Gogues is something that people love.
Definitely. People would
That's
wear
a shouter
Gan.
Outer.
So it's going to be like a commemorative band.
But this is also the Gan Gogues band.
It is. That's the Gan Gogues right there. So
Gan Gogues shirt or hat.
Hey, we haven't even done a pod since our Alberta, Saskatchewan rip.
What? Really? No.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Since
we
before
haven't.
California?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the last one? Oh, yeah, because that was first? Or
Well, you got home the day before you went to California.
Yeah.
So, by the way, thanks, Buds.
That was great. Yeah, that was
thanks, Buds, in Winnipeg, Regina,
man,
Calgary, and Sherwood
rip.
Park. Oh, yeah. Jeremy Dutcher was at the East Coast Music Awards, too. He was playing in the same venue as us in Sherwood Park, remember?
Yes.
He's packing them in pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
It's nice that something untraditional and a type of music that isn't as widely traveled is getting its moment in the sun. He's obviously a very passionate advocate for his culture and that music, and I love it.
It's great. It is awesome.
Go.
I love that stuff too.
I love that
I love
stuff
it when
too.
Bods are being full on bods and like just coming straight from the heart on every angle.
Well,
it's
speaking
not
of bods
that
are full on bods, the first episode of Your Two Cents is going to drop in the last week of May. And Max and Tim from Arkells were kind enough to donate some of their time to the cause. And you got to interview them in character.
Yes, I got to be Dollar Bill, and it's pretty fun. It's an informative as well as entertaining, because you get to see them and their element. There's some awesome elements of showing how massive and big they are as a band. We got some jams. It's an enjoyable little piece.
Was it weird for you to interview them, especially Tim, in character, because you've known him for so long?
Not really, because the questions were real questions, in a sense. So, it was just, I think because I was pretending to be this guy, he was a little bit kind of a bro, you know, a super happy, you know, a very excitable person. And they got it. It was fun.
It's sort of a Much Music-ish tribute.
Yeah.
Which VJs did you draw from, would you say?
I'd say it was a little bit of Steve Anthony, a little Bill Wilichka.
Yeah.
A little Rick the Temp. Remember how happy he always was?
Oh, yeah. And
right?
Still is.
Yeah,
like, just one of
absolutely.
The nicest dudes you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
So sincere.
Yeah. Gotta love Campanelli. He's a bud.
Well, there's a guy who has made a career. Like, he's been working 25 years, hasn't he?
Yeah, for sure.
I wonder when he dropped his foot
in the door and then. Well, I think it was more as soon as, because Much was using it as like kind of publicity, I guess, for the temp thing, right? So I'm sure they were like, keep using it, but he was probably like, can I drop this like any time now, please? You know, no. Probably 2 months.
It's been 8 years, no. Jeremy Taggart, how many Much Music VJs can you name? Go.
Steve Anthony, Bill Walitzka.
Two.
Rick Campanelli.
Three.
Erica M.
Four.
Natalie, what was her name?
Richard?
Richard.
Five.
Natalie Richard.
Nice.
Christopher Ward.
Six.
Master T.
Seven.
Laga Janus, wasn't he one for 2 seconds?
Yeah, sure.
He was. Georgie.
Yeah.
Strombolopoulos. Amanda Walsh.
10.
What's his name? Aaron Strati. Remember Aaron Strati? He was like a one of those temp things. Friends with Dan Mangan. That's when I first met Dan Mangan, because I emailed to Dan. I don't think we've met, Dan. He's like, actually, we did. Back when I was in Toronto with Aaron Strati one night, when I was out with them. So that was like in 1999.
Wow. Like the latter days of Much Music VJs.
Like Dan Mangan was like probably 19 or something. Just a crazy kid.
Mangan was just on Kimmel, by the way.
Oh, yeah. So I'm trying to think of more VJs now.
I've got a few.
Kim Clark Champness, did I say that yet?
Nope, 12.
Damn.
That's pretty
good. That's pretty
good. Michael Williams?
Michael Williams, yes.
Namagenny? Remember Nam?
Yeah, yeah.
Bradford Howe?
Bradford Howe. Sookie and Lee, too.
Sookie and Lee. Ziggy Lorenk.
Holy moly.
Remember, she ended up doing much more music, but she had Ziggy's house or whatever that was.
That's right. Remember Angela Dorman? Was that her name?
Yeah,
she was on
like
Seinfeld even. Remember she was on an episode of Seinfeld?
Crazy.
That's,
does Monica Diehl count?
Yeah, as, absolutely.
Much
sure.
Much Music VJ, 19?
Yeah.
I feel like there must have been someone else with three names. 19's a pretty good haul.
Yeah. Especially if, like, we haven't named anybody in the last 10 years. We probably could.
Oh, did you say...
Remember Teresa Roncon? She did the metal show?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's another one. That's 20.
Ew. did you say, or did I, Michael Williams?
You did, yeah.
Because he was an OG, like, early on.
And he also became a radio legend in Montreal.
Did he?
I think so, Wally.
Well, that makes sense. He had a great set of pipes.
Yeah,
speaking of legends, how about, I don't think we've talked about this either, working on a record at Metalworks in Mississauga.
Yeah, that's it.
And Gil Moore from Triumph just hanging around, being a bud, buying lunch, telling war stories.
Just totally, man.
That was the best.
Just great hanging out at Metalworks. And we're probably going to mix at Metalworks too, so we'll be back there. And Gil's a bod, man. He's a beauty. I love him.
He really is. And he has the distance and perspective to weigh in on touring and band life and ways to achieve longevity because he's been there. But he's still one of the boys, right? Loves to hang and tell stories. It was great.
And we played him a couple jams, and he loved that. He really kind of gave us some perspective on the Joe and Gino stuff, because he's like, those guys used to just go at each other, and they didn't care who was watching, but they would scream and yell all the time.
Did he say that?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I didn't hear that.
They would just scream and have these crazy fights all the time.
Amazing.
Like, So it makes it even sweeter that on the record we've got a Joe and Gino track that's like basically them just getting at each other for the whole song.
It's a demo and it falls apart because they start fighting.
Yeah.
Our hope is, by the way, to have five options or so and let the Buds weigh in on the naming of the record.
Yeah.
Which feels very Canadian because the Buds got us here. So it feels like they should all get to a
choice
in what the record is called. Yeah. There's some good contenders.
Yeah. So we're getting, I mean, that's, it's all coming into shape this summer. So, I mean, we'll keep everybody informed. And once we know the actual drop date, then we'll start implementing some more of the narrative of the record.
Yeah.
What it's about and who's doing what, and it'll be fun.
Pretty fun. And also, not to be coy, but we have at least one summer date that we'll get to announce, hopefully in the next few weeks, that we're really excited about. And there's a possibility of as many as five summer dates, which we feel optimistic and hopeful about. But they could see us going coast to coast, which is really exciting.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I'm off to Switzy, bud.
You're going to Switzy.
Yeah.
The Canada of Europe.
Yeah. Going to Switzerland tomorrow for 10 days. There's a family of MMA fighters staying in my house while we're gone, so don't even think about
it. That's right. That's right.
But, Georges St-Pierre and family are staying here.
Couple hockey players.
You've been, haven't you?
Just kind of in and out Zurich, but like touring.
So, like airport styles?
No, touring bus styles, but like just kind of, hey, this is cool. Wow, look at the mountains. Nice little town. All right, bye. Right. So not enough. I would love to spend more time there and actually dig into the culture because it's pretty deep.
Well, I Googled prettiest villages in Switzerland, and there's one that kept coming up on all the top 10 lists, so we chose it, and that's where we're going to stay. No cars there, just trams and trains.
That's awesome, man. That's
we're psyched. We're really looking forward to it.
Just you and Carol, right?
That none of us have been. No, the girls are coming too.
Oh, the girls are coming too. Oh, perfect. Yeah. Okay. I thought it was just you guys.
They're at the age now where they will actually remember some of these trips. Unlike the going to Disney World when they're 3 and 1. They'll actually have core memories of these trips, as you know from your Cali trip. Yeah. And you know, there'll come a time in the not-too-distant future when they don't want to come anymore. So for now, while they're willing and into it.
I have friends that to this day, like, have family vacations together because they did it every year and their parents demanded that this is what we're doing. This 2 weeks of every year, we're together and all the family is, as they got older, they still would bring all the families. It just kind of would get bigger and bigger at the resort that they would go to. But it was like, just that's how it is, and they grew up that way, and it still works. You know?
I kind of dig it.
If you kind of demand it, it's like that. Just we're asking 2 weeks a year, you know, and it's the play together, stay together concept. Just getting used to having that be a routine where it's like they'll miss getting together for real, as opposed to like forgetting 10 years went by and you don't see each other. You know,
well, they're also
not that
just
what happened, but
they're such a good hang. They're such interesting conversationalists. I like their outlook on the world.
Yeah.
And we could go without them, and we talked about it, but this trip is for Carol's birthday. And so the girls were both like, "Nope, don't want to be away from mommy on her birthday. It's her birthday and we want to make it
that's
special."
Good. That's awesome.
So that's what ultimately drove the decision. But we're psyched, man.
It's so beautiful there. The mountains, like, the girls will love that.
Yeah.
Alone. Just the
chocolate and beer, like, cheese.
Yeah.
What's not to like?
Bring back some chocolate, bud.
Gonna bring back some memories too, bud.
Yeah. So let's peace.
Let's peace. Good chatting.
Yeah, good chatting. Talk to you soon, bud.
Talk to you soon,
bud. Have a good trip.
You too.
Bananas are potassium. Bananas are yellow.
Bananas, bananas come in bunches. Sometimes there's tarantulas in them. Oh.